As Luke tells the story of Jesus' birth, he begins by setting the scene, giving us some context, telling us of an event, Augustus' desire to have a census of all the people. It's about as cosmic a setting as we could be given. Here is Augustus, the ruler of the known world, the most powerful man alive. And from there, the story begins to telescope. And we hone in on Quirinius, the governor of Syria. And from there, we zoom in to Joseph and Mary, and of course, baby Jesus. Joseph and Mary are caught up in this story because of the mechanics of the Roman Empire. Being subjects, they needed to participate in the census. And at first blush, one might think that this story is going from the sublime to the mundane, from the famous to the anonymous, to the important to the inconsequential. But that's not what's happening. The truth is, once Augustus and Quirinius have been mentioned, their jobs have been done, and they move off the stage. And then the story focuses on the people who are important. Joseph and Mary, and of course, baby Jesus. He's born in a manger. I don't know if you have an image of that setting, of what it was like. Perhaps it's similar to what we have here at the front of the sanctuary. Maybe you have a creche scene at home. It has a rude little barn, has some animals, an ox, a sheep, maybe there's some birds, a dog, a cat. We imagine the people there, and then there's some angels, and then, of course, maybe we start mixing the Gospels together, and we include Matthew's Magi, too. But if we just think about Luke's story, there are no animals mentioned. No cows, no sheep, no donkeys, just Joseph and Mary and Jesus and the shepherds who will come. We don't know what the manger looked like either. It could have been a rude barn, or it could have been a house in the town. At the Semitic Museum at Harvard, there is a wonderful life-size replica of a first century Judean house. And the first floor would have been reserved for the animals. The second floor would have been where the people lived. And it may have been when they came into the inn, there wasn't room, but they found a better place to stay. But we have assumed that the manger represents the fact that they were poor, that they had no resources, that they were left out. The purpose of the manger was to serve as a sign, something that would be distinctive that the shepherds could find. And it's the shepherds who are the truly remarkable part of this story. Now, here in the Upper Valley, we love our farms, and we think of them as bucolic, beautiful places, people who have gone back to the land and worked with nature. And those of us who don't do farm work might romanticize it. But it's hard, and it's difficult. And being a shepherd is not romantic work. And back in that day and time, being a shepherd was like being a trash man. It was dirty work, and you smelled, and no one wanted to be with you, and you were left out of things, and you were ostracized. The shepherds couldn't have predictable hours, so they didn't get to participate in worship. And these were the people that the angels came to. These were the people that God chose to announce the good news to. He didn't go to Quirinius. He didn't go to Augustus, the people who mattered. He didn't go to the chief priests in Jerusalem. When God became incarnate, he had his arrival announced to the shepherds. Now, if the news had been shared with Augustus or Quirinius or some other mucky muck, the odds are they would have been busy and had other things to worry about, and would have thought, that's great, so what? Not important, I'm the big cheese. But the shepherds, The shepherds didn't have those distractions. The shepherds were able to hear and to see. They were able to welcome the good news of the angels. They were able to hear the good news that God had arrived. And so, without making excuses, without thinking that maybe what we saw, the vision of the angels, was a delusion, that they were tired, without saying, gee, we're too busy here in the field, we've got to take care of our sheep, they dropped everything. And they went to Bethlehem to see the child. We've heard this story so many times over the years. We've seen it reenacted. We've seen it in paintings and on TV. We've read about it in books. It's been domesticated. It has lost some of its magic for us. But it is a truly strange and remarkable story. That doesn't mean it's not true. But it should shock us. Because here we have the scandal of God arriving in the form of a human baby. And that news being shared with people who supposedly didn't count. And that announcement in and of itself told us something about who God was and what he cared about and what his priorities were. God didn't come for the Augustuses or the Quiriniuses of this world. He came for the shepherds. He came for the people who were left out. That doesn't mean that the Augustuses and Quiriniuses don't count. But they are no more important. They are no more valuable to God than the shepherds. So tonight, as we reflect on the birth of Jesus, we do so in different ways. Earlier this evening, the sanctuary was a riot of activity with kids running all over the place, and we felt joy. Here now, we are contemplative. And we can meditate on the meaning of Jesus' birth. Later this evening, we will celebrate communion, the meal that he shared with us when he grew older. All of these are good and appropriate and faithful ways for us to welcome the Christ child into the world. My one hope this evening is that each of us will be able to hear this news as the shepherds did long ago. That God has come not for Augustus or Quirinius or some other people, but God has come for me and for you. And that we'll hold those words in our heart like Mary did the news, and that we'll ponder them, and we'll appreciate them, and we'll experience joy and wonder at this amazing thing that God has done.